Good afternoon. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels, President of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and Distinguished Lecturer Emeritus at York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this July 15th edition, hot day edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's on WBAI, of course, with the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. Of course, you've just heard Margaret Prescott with Sojourner Truth. That's on the network, and following us will be another powerful program, which is entitled Advocating for Justice with the host Arthur Swartz. So we've got some good stuff going on here. Our program today will focus, as the previous one did, on what we're calling the state of the race, that is the state of the presidential race 2020. Two guests will be joining us, my dream team of Earl O'Hari Hutchinson and Bill Fletcher, both of whom have shows on the Pacifica Network, by the way, will be joining me. But before we do that, we just quickly want to encourage everyone, as we do every week, for better or worse, and I say it's always for better, but we don't always get the results, at least I don't, that I'd like, but hopefully that will change. We do need WBAI buddies. WBAI buddies are individuals like many of you out there who are contributors but don't do it on a sustaining basis or every month. So this is an opportunity for $120 a year, a minimum $10 a month, to become a sustaining contributor to WBAI. And there's a lot of benefits that go with that too, by the way. If you go to give to WBAI.org, you'll see all of the benefits that go even at $10. Tote bag, benefits with consumers, commercial outlets that reward you for being a WBAI buddy. Now, no reward should actually be needed, since the real reward is WBAI and the Pacifica Network and all of the extraordinary programming that we have on this network. And we hope that Vantage Point is counted among the programs that you feel is worthy of supporting. What this does mean is that the management, you manage your household the same, you have a more predictable sense of the stream of income. And if you can identify a basic set of income that you know is going to come in, that kind of gives you greater flexibility, right? And there's progress being made every month here at WBAI, all kinds of changing in programming and updating in programming. We're being encouraged to do lots of good stuff, some of which I can't keep up with because I'm just so busy, but I see the rhythm and the motion that's there. But from my perspective, the most important thing is the ability to have the kind of work that we showcase with Institute of the Black World 21st Century, including the gentrification summit that was held in Newark, and most recently the hearing that we helped to orchestrate on reparations, and the forum that you heard. All of these are things that are broadcast here on WBAI and are supported. Now, there are many other things that I could point to as well. The Proud Africans rally we had, and all of these things to me are incredibly important. So become a WBAI buddy. It's very simple. I'm a WBAI buddy. It means I'm a sustaining contributor. And, it's painless because you take it out of your credit card or your savings account. I guess you can do it on a debit card as well. But just go to give2wbai.org and say, I'm stepping up today. I want to be a sustaining contributor. I want to be able to help fortify not only the station. The station represents a key source of resistance to the madness that we see out there. And this most recent attack on these four brilliant, capable, able, which is beside the point. I mean, in a way, they are brilliant and all that. That's beside the point. But they just happen to be some of the most progressive people we've seen. These women of color, the squad, by the orange man. I mean, we got to get rid of him, period. That's what we're going to be talking about. And there's no excuses. No way. We have to get rid of the orange man, period. Now, joining us is my guest for the first segment of the show, my dream team, and they haven't been on in a while, and I'm just eager to hear their perspectives on any number of things. Joining us from Los Angeles is Earl Ofari Hutchinson, who puts out the Hutchinson Report, and he also has his own radio show on the affiliate in Los Angeles, which I'll ask him to identify because I get the KPAs and the APAs. I get them all mixed up, but that's okay. He'll clarify that. And, of course, Bill Fletcher, president, former president, CEO of Trans-Africa Forum, author and veteran labor and civil rights activist. But also he has a show, I know, on WPFW. So Earl Ofari Hutchinson and Bill Fletcher, welcome to Vantage Point.
Well, always a pleasure, Ron.
Always.
So, Earl, give the station. I get the KPFA, and then I get them A's mixed up out there on the West Coast.
Well, I got to tell you, there are definitely a lot of K's out here. KPFK. Right. Well, KKK. No, KPFK.
Okay. All right. So that's your show, and I'm just saying that we're on the Pacifica Network. All of us have shows, and that's a good thing. Well, let's jump right into it. Handicap, from your perspective right now, how do you just see, not so much in terms of your preference, I'm going to ask you that in a minute, but how do you see the race shaping up, excuse me, right now, Earl and then Bill?
Okay. Whoa, cool. We need about 2 hours on that one. A couple of things right off the top. Big debate now. Let's take the Democrats first. Big debate, are there too many candidates? We've got 25, 26, and probably still counting a number of individuals that are vying for the Democratic presidential nomination. Many people are saying, wait a minute, got a lot of people out there with a lot of competing ideas and views. Are you really muddling things, confusing things? Well, you know, as the old thing, let a thousand flowers bloom. Let's hear it all. We've got debates coming up. Well, we've had one. We have another one, actually two scheduled, one this month and another in September. So the thinking is we'll get a lot of ideas put out there. We'll get a read on what their programs are, their platforms. And in addition to that, some will gracefully or maybe not so gracefully bow out. In other words, feel
yeah,
will
yeah,
be
Earl, but Earl, right now, yeah, I get all of that. But when I say handicap, from your perspective right now, who has the most traction? Who seems to be, doing reasonably well so far? Because there is a huge field.
Well, if you want to go by the polls.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you want to go by the polls, then you got the big four. You've got Harris, you've got Biden, you've got Warren, and, of course, you've got Bernie. So right away, the polls have been pretty consistent about them. At the bottom, you've got everybody else. Cory Booker is trending toward the bottom. So you got a dogfight right now at this point in time. But again, things can change. You got a dogfight between those four. Now, the subtext to that is this. You got Biden, a very centrist Democrat with all the right party credentials and pedigree with the establishment. And then, of course, you got Bernie, you got Elizabeth, the progressives on the other side, and you got Kamala's probably straddling both. So all of that put together at this point, really, I have to tell you, it's difficult to get really a read on who's going where, who will be where, who will land on top or the bottom at this point. We need to see more. But quickly on the other side, here's the big problem. When you're talking about handicapping a race, this I can say with certainty. Trump is not going to be a walkover. Forget the polls that show these four Democrats handily beating Trump. That's nonsense. If anybody believes that, I got that Brooklyn Bridge, Ron, in your backyard to sell you out in the Mojave Desert. It ain't that. You can't go by that. Trump is going to have. Here's what Democrats are faced with. Quick checklist. Trump has got the presidency, the bully pulpit of that. He's going to have a king's ransom behind him. He's going to have a dirty dealing that knows how to win, take no prisoners, united GOP behind him. He's got the power of mainstream media. They love this guy. They slaver over this guy. If he tweets, you know, if he breaks wind, that's going to be headline news for the next 24 hours. He's got all of that. He's a dirty dealer. He knows how to manipulate wheel and deal. And on top of that, the bigger those are big items, but two other things we got to consider. No sitting president in the history of this republic has ever lost an election when there's the appearance, notice I said appearance, the appearance and or reality of a burgeoning economy. People are back to work, making money. I got the wealth inequality. We got all that. I said the appearance of a viable economy. So these are a lot of tough obstacles that I think any Democrat going in there is going to be faced with.
Bill Fletcher, how do you see it in terms of who seems to be doing well, but also perhaps comment on what Earl is saying in terms of the formidable candidate that Trump will be in 2020?
So I agree, actually, with a lot of what Earl said, but let me say where play a little nuance. I think the strongest candidacy is Sanders. And I don't mean that simply by the poll numbers. I mean by his supporters, that he has very committed supporters in a way that I would distinguish from most of the other candidates. And keeping in mind that we're very early in this whole thing, and one of the things that really infuriates me is how the mainstream media tries to pin people down to who's a winner and who's a loser, you know, 18 months before the election. But having said that, I think what's interesting and notable is that Sanders supporters are very committed to him. And most of these others, there are people that have varying degrees of attraction to particular candidates, like Elizabeth Warren and Kamala, but that's different. And so I think that that's one thing that we need to factor in. In terms of what Earl was saying about the final election, I don't think that it's going to be a cakewalk. I do think Trump is going to get defeated. But I think that the factor that you just laid out, Earl, about the economy, with any other president, I'd say, yeah, you're right. But this is not any other president. And that's where it really becomes very, very unpredictable. Because we're dealing with someone who is consistently bad on so many issues that have infuriated people, many of whom took a pass in the last election. And I think that's where his weakness lies.
Well, on your last point, Bill, I just wrote, President Obama was not the greatest president of all time, I had issues with him. I'd rate him as a good president, actually, and I don't say that with any disparaging. I think he did a good job. He fell short of expectations. I criticized him as I would criticize anybody because I think he fell short in some areas. But nonetheless, you talk about the piling on, I mean, the utter hypocrisy of the overall electorate, that a president that is doing all of the negative, nasty things, including the most recent attack on the squad, I mean, Obama would have been ridden out of the country on a rail.
Right.
And so what worries me is, how is it that with all of this, we're even contemplating a difficult race against Trump? I mean,
because we live in a settler state. I mean, you know the answer to that. Because we live in a settler state.
Sure you
and
do.
We live in a situation where there's a core of at least 25% of the electorate that's completely worthless and is thoroughly reactionary. And that's the beginning point of any analysis of the other side, that there is this significant core of the electorate that will never come to the right side of the force. Never. It doesn't really matter. So that's one of the factors that we're dealing with. They don't really care. They are making excuse after excuse because what they look at with Trump is, as I keep using this, he's a blunt force object that advances the objectives of multiple wings within the right. So they're prepared to tolerate his nonsense. The question is, the 60%+ of the population that is sane and is not prepared to go for, that is not in support of this guy, is it enough for them to get off their rusty dusty in November 2020 and say, you know what, this guy's got to be sent to retirement. That's the question, and that therein lies the issue about, is the candidate of the Democratic Party going to be compelling enough that people will feel that, in view of how outrageous this guy is, they're prepared to make the step.
Well, I think that's this whole question of the arithmetic is very important, because unfortunately there are still huge numbers of people in this country who just do not vote, who just and they're not going to vote in the next election because there's a whole pattern of non-voting. Let me just move to the next question. From the perspective of, dare I say, a black agenda, they're all of a sudden people are kind of tripping over themselves a little bit, you know, on issues. Reparations is out there now. And then last week, Mayor Pete from South Bend, Indiana, just, you know, dropped. He said, I'm for H.R. 40. But in the meantime, here's an 18-page black agenda, you know, of things that ought to be dealt with. Then people, so talk to us, Earl, about that. From a perspective of those issues that matter in a race-specific way, you know, in terms of housing and economic development and the sort of the deterioration in the urban inner-city areas because of gentrification, disinvestment, who do you see there among these candidates that's offering up, you know, some policy perspectives that we might gravitate to?
None at this point, and I'll tell you why. Not so much because of Biden, Harris, Bernie, Elizabeth, and the pack of 2025 others. Not so much because they don't know these issues. I mean, these people have been around for a long time. They're not ignorant in terms of what has really moved and motivated major issues within Black America. I mean, they know many of these things. Now, the question is, why isn't there a sustained address on their part? You've had one debate, not much talked about there. You know, the sideshow issue about busing, and that's not dealing with the issues of today. So why is that? Well, a couple of reasons. One, we need to look at what white evangelicals do, the Tea Party did. What did they do? They went to the GOP and they said, look, this is our agenda. Get rid of abortion. Get rid of gay stuff. Get rid of all of that. You better toe the line or we're going to punish you. Punishing you means we'll run another candidate, get you out of there. Well, you see what happened. They moved the GOP even further to the right. On the other side, why would a Harris, Biden, or any of the other candidates, I don't care if you put the best black agenda on the table, why would they champion that if there's not a sense on their part there's going to be a punishment to them, i.e. withdrawing support, if in fact you don't do that? So, see, it's really a two-way street. We keep talking about the black agenda. Will they talk about it? What parts of it will they pick and choose? Why should they? Without that knowing and knowledge, there's got to be accountability. You see, one of the inherent strengths and weaknesses of the black vote is it's lockdown democratic. That's a strength, but it's also a weakness. It's a blessing and a curse. They already know it. They've got the black vote. But at the same time, there was a sense that you've got to show up with an agenda, pushing that agenda to retain the black vote and even boost the black vote, then I think we'd be miles further down the line. So it's lagging on that part. Let's hope again. One of the things I did want to do, though, Bill and Ron, I'm going to write an op-ed piece because we got another debate coming up in Detroit the latter part of this month. I'm going to write an op-ed piece challenging all the candidates. I want to hear what you have to say on the one issue that unites blacks across the board. I mean, no matter where you come from, it's a hot-button issue that always touches a nerve, and that is the police murder of unarmed blacks. I haven't heard any of you say anything about that. I'm going to challenge them. Somebody talk about that at the next debate, but we got to do more of that.
So, Ron,
Go ahead.
See, I disagree slightly with what you're raising, Earl. See, the political right that you describe, the way I read history is that what they will do is that they will go to an incumbent, a Republican, for example, and say, If you don't move further to the right, we're going to primary you. In the final elections, almost always they'll back whoever the Republican is, short of something really outrageous about that Republican. But what they're prepared to really do is to primary people, which is what scares the death out of almost every sitting Republican. So when we're talking about challenging and putting our agenda forward, it needs to be in the context of primaries. We need progressives and including but not limited to African Americans prepared to primary these folks and not fall into this camp of we're being divisive, which is why I think, for example, that having multiple candidates for the presidency right now is great. I think this is excellent. This is exactly what we want. So I think that therein lies the threat. I would also say that I believe that Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have attempted to address elements of our agenda. And I say elements, but I think that your basic point is correct. And that's one of the points about issues of organization and of pressure. The fact that there's even been discussions of reparations, knowing that reparations will not be a presidential issue, but nevertheless it's something that's come up in the primaries, I think speaks to the churning that's going on within Black America and how that's moved onto the electoral stage. So I'm not losing hope in the middle of this.
Well, that's the other piece, though, Bill, talking about who will show up. To me, it seems to me that unless the Democrats are willing to, and this was the criticism of Obama, even though Obama, people gave him, cut him a break because he was the brother and so forth and so on, but some people, you know, and he was able to carry it. Hillary Clinton was not, because there was no race-specific agenda where that people could grab a hold to it and say, all right, yeah, I'm down with health care and all these other issues, but what about those things that specifically relate to me? I mean, criminal justice policy is obviously one of them. This issue of gentrification, it seems to me, is another. I applaud Buttigieg for raising the question of an urban Marshall Plan, because that's one of the things that certainly out of the work that we've done with the Gentrification Summit in Newark and even last year, you know, and we hope to really do something about that because we want to put our own imprint on it. But there's a need for something that will address the issues of Black people, but also to motivate those Black voters that sit it out to march on ballot boxes, because there's enough Black voters in virtually any of those swing states who, and I'm not saying this negatively, because the Democrats have to make the case. If you don't make the case, then people, they're not going to be motivated, period. I mean, I'd like for them to be motivated anyway, but that's just not what's happening. So in that sense, you know, I think that the whole question of a Black agenda becomes important. And as I listened through the first debate, I didn't hear everything, but it was just interesting to see the ease with which, for example, Elizabeth Warren, you know, just sort of just talked about supporting, you know, Black colleges and universities. I mean, she didn't even miss a beat. I mean, it seems like some candidates seem to be trying to address this in their policy perspectives. I'd be interested in seeing what Bernie is saying, because I know people have been pushing Bernie, and Bernie still seems to largely be locked in, as was Nader and others, and just this sort of a rigid, you know, the 1%, and which I certainly support, but integrating into that, and Earl makes the point, with some sustained commitment, including how do they campaign and where do they go, and that applies to Kamala Harris. Now, she went to the Essence Festival and rolled out this plan for Black homeowners, a multi-trillion-dollar plan. But when they get on the stump and in the debates, it doesn't usually come up. Is what you're saying, Earl? And I'm I'm worried about that as well.
Yeah, let me just say one thing about that. You know, Bill, you mentioned before Bernie and Elizabeth. You know, they're addressing some elements, and you were very careful, elements. But that's important. The fact is, you know, I'm unabashed. I'm a Warren supporter. I've made that clear. You know, I'm going to the barricades with Elizabeth. You know, to me, I love Bernie. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm on board. I'm okay with him. Mm-hmm. But what Elizabeth brings, in line with what you're saying, Ron and Bill, with that agenda, here's a woman who's genuinely got progressive cred, up and down, unapologetic. But she does something else. She has actually thought through many of the public, compelling public policy issues, debt reduction. She just unveiled an immigration plan, a national voter act, health care. When you look at her policy statements, they are very thought through. They are very, very pointed, and they're pragmatic. So that's what I think we need to see more of from these candidates. And yes, there are many issues that can be fleshed out in terms of the black agenda. But I think the Elizabeth Warren model, the way she's dealt with public policy, is great. It's a great starting point for the organizations to come to her and the other candidates and say, we have thought out programs to embrace them.
I think you're right, Earl. You just need to get her better on foreign policy.
Yeah. Well,
she's terrible.
She's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she's really outstanding in so many ways, and I think you're right about elaborating the policies and so that people really do have an idea as to what she would do. One quick note is that Bernie did write yesterday, I think it was in the Washington Post or the day before, a very good column. And I have been as critical as both of you of Bernie on the way that he has treated race. But this seemed to be a new step to try to integrate, forgive the pun, of race into the discussion of the 1%. Mm. So hopefully there are people that are on his case really pushing him. But I think we need more of what Elizabeth Warren, her approach. I think that that's correct. And I think that the other thing we have to be careful about is not doing a repeat of the Obama years. I mean, you might be being more diplomatic than I would be, Ron, about the Obama years, because I think it wasn't just a series of mistakes. There was a certain ideological view on his part that many of us missed, and one of the things that I worry about, particularly with Harris and New Jersey.
Booker.
Booker.
Oh, Booker.
Freudian, man.
Yeah, he's
like,
he's...
I'm wishing that he would pull out of the campaign. It feels like a redundancy.
That's right.
It feels like the Obama years, just, yeah, you know, 2020. And we had that historical development in 2008. That was great. We don't need that again. We need something different.
Right.
I don't see
Absolutely.
Them offering.
Yeah, I mean, this Booker, you know, he gets out there and it's clear he wants to be, it's like he's doing, just like Biden is embracing and hugging Obama as hard as he can. Booker is also seemingly want to be the Obama wannabe, and Harris is, she takes a position one day, she changes it the next, and she equivocates,
right,
and she tap dances, and
exactly.
It's very, very difficult. Yeah. So I got a minute left. So Warren is your candidate. That's your preference right now, Earl. You're going to the barricades. Who do you see on the vice? Who would you want to see as a vice president?
Well, I think one combination, I think you've got a divided Democratic Party. We've seen that the last few days with the events. I'm convinced in those five or six states are really going to decide the White House. You're going to have a centrist and you're going to have a progressive. So, you know, I'm not uncomfortable with Biden, Warren, Biden, perhaps Harris in there too. I could go with that. Bernie, I need to see more of Bill on Bernie, because there's one problem there, I think. You know, Democratic Socialists, how will it play when they red baiting the death in those six states, and also the age factor? I'm not an ageist because I'm up there too, but I'm just a little hesitant about that. Biden, Warren, Harris, possibly.
Bill?
I'm worried about the same thing, Earl, in terms of Sanders. I'm a Sanders supporter. I also like Julian Castro. And I was actually surprised by his performance in the in the debate, very impressed. And I like de Blasio, but I don't think that he has a chance. And in terms of what the lineup could be, I suspect that there's a lot of centrist Democrats that would love to see a Biden-Harris ticket and would look at that as the way to reach black America. And I would say that that would not be a good ticket at all. And I don't want to see Biden up there. I really don't. I just, you know, I think that he should go teach college or something.
I do,
know?
Too.
Well, his wife already does that.
I mean, I got to go with him. At the end of the day, I got to go with him. But that is not my preference. I was praying that he would just stay on the sidelines and not do what he's doing. But he is. But it is interesting that he does seem to have a hold on a certain sector of the black vote. And I'm disturbed by this whole notion that black voters are waiting to see what white voters think before they can decide what they want to do. I really, really don't like that notion, since I think the black vote, if properly cultivated, as was done by Stacey Abrams in Georgia and Gilliam, not quite as well as perhaps Abrams, but she unapologetically, you know, said, look, I'm going to organize the unorganized. I'm going for those voters that, you know, there may be some white folks too, but I'm going for those folks who ain't been in the mix. And she, and black folks, I think, I haven't done a hard look at it, but I think the analysis would show that she inspired black folks.
They responded.
And they responded.
But I think that that's right, Ron, but I think that there's another factor, which is that Biden was a white guy loyal to a black guy.
Right.
And that for a certain part of our population, just like there were black folks that cheered George Patton because he let black folks fight the Germans, right? Despite the fact that Patton was a thorough racist, there's this loyalty element that exists within a segment of our population, of our people, and that they look at him as this white guy was loyal to this black leader. And I think that's something we got to factor in.
Absolutely. Well, look, it's been a great discussion. We could have taken the whole hour, but I want to get some comments from my audience to see what they think about this as well. You know, we're going to be talking about this for a long time, but we got to get rid of the orange man, period. Right. This is one of the most dangerous, frightening periods in the history of these United States of America. Earl Afar Hutchinson, thank you so much. Appreciate being on,
thank
as
you.
Well as Bill Fletcher. And we'll be calling on you again in the next couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Thank
Take
you.
Take care, guys. Bye.
All right. We're going to take a break here for announcements of what's happening in the community announcement section for WBAI, and come back on the other side to take your views on the state of the race. And by the state of the race, we mean the 2020 presidential race. You can start lining up to give your opinions at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. We'll be right back after these announcements.
One of WBAI's most listened to program hosts, Dr. Gary Knoll, is doing another fundraiser for WBAI Radio. He will premiere his new film, Deadly Deception.
And this is a hard, hard hitting documentary. And everyone who's interested in the truth about the deep state and vaccines and big pharma and the corruption of the CDC, it's all documented.
And Gary will be in conversation with another WBAI host, Leonard Lopate.
And I said, I'll only speak with Leonard if he asks me hard questions. I don't like softball questions. Throw the fastball. Okay, so that'll be interesting.
It sure will be. That's Thursday, July 25th, for an evening with Gary Knoll, hosted by Leonard Lopate. This is at Symphony Space in Manhattan on West 95th Street at 7 p.m. A $35 contribution to listener-sponsored WBAI will get you a ticket to the screening and conversation. Call 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, or go to our website, WBAI.org, and click on An Evening with Gary Knoll.
Okay, we're back. Very, very lively discussion with my dream team. And, of course, we've added to that as well. And I'm going to be asking several people to comment. Mark Thompson was on last week. And, of course, Mark is launching his new show on Make It Plain. You can see the announcement about that on the website, IBW's website, IBW21.org. Dear friend, you know, Mark Thompson is also offering his perspective. So we want to get the perspective from our audience. This is their, you know, Bill Fletcher says the good thing is the diversity of the candidates. We sure got enough of them. There must be 2025. Is it Steyer? Is that the name? I should have looked it up, but the one who's been pushing for impeachment, he just jumped in. Just the other day. And, you know, you've got a full field. But there are, you know, it is Biden, Sanders, Kamala Harris, and Elizabeth Warren actually surging strongly lately. And you get a lot of mention of Buttigieg because of the money he's raising, but his poll numbers haven't budged very much. And everybody else is kind of just out there. And I was fascinated, frankly, by Bill Fletcher's notion of Bill de Blasio. Maybe it's just emotional and visceral with me because he's getting a lot of play. He's on a lot of shows. You know, he's on Morning Joe this morning. He was on CNN yesterday. And I'm looking all over the place. All of a sudden, somebody's pushing de Blasio, even though I don't know how much money he's raised or whether he has any poll numbers at all. But anyway, let's get a perspective from our audience. 212-209-2877. And I'll just make it clear from the very beginning. Any one of these 27 candidates will do for me to beat Trump. That is the strategic objective for me. And I have preferences. I have candidates I like better. But I'm not staying home because it's a candidate that I don't prefer. And I'll tell you right now, I do not prefer Biden. But if Biden gets the nomination, you know, climate change, the Supreme Court, there's any number of issues that he will be vastly better on than Trump that will compel me to push Biden. That's not my preference. But the strategic objective for me right now is to get to purge the White House of the Orange Man. 212-209-2877. Let's go to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, dude. How you doing? Charlie?
I'm doing good.
Okay. You know, I'm a Bernie man. You know, from what I see, he's the only one not taking corporate money, which is why I'm for him and also for Medicare for All. But I want to make a comment about Trump and his corporate fascist friends. Behind closed doors, they're laughing and they love identity politics because it serves them. And you know, when we look at Trump and we look at what they do, and we say to ourselves,
"So when you say identity, when you say identity politics, you mean a black agenda, for example?"
Well, a black nationalist agenda, a woman first agenda, and anything that says "me first." Whenever you say "me first," you're saying everybody else second.
Well, not
okay,
necessarily.
So that divides people.
No, it shouldn't divide people. You know,
I disagree with you.
I knew you disagree, but I'm taking the opposite position. I'll tell you right now, I have a definitive preference for a woman candidate in this race, and the reason
I'm for the best person.
Well, there's a whole bunch of best persons.
That's a sexist comment, what you just said.
Well, no, I don't think it's a sexist comment.
I do. That's why we agree to disagree.
That's right. Because it seems to me that what has happened is the politics has been dominated for so long by men and by patriarchy. I ain't talking about you. I ain't talking about me. I'm talking about the general scenario. And this last election in 2018, it was really women who took to the forefront, who surged, who got into the mix, and who really, really pushed hard to make many of the gains across the board. And so I think that should be awarded. I think there are times, given the history of the country, when men who have been dominant should step back, you know, and push women to the leadership. Now, again, if Biden wins, if Bernie wins and so forth, I'm going to support Bernie or Biden. But I'm just saying my preference, I have a preference to see, and then I'm not just, it wouldn't just be any woman, by the way. I happen to like Elizabeth Warren.
I'd just like, to add one more thing.
Sure, let's go right ahead.
Yeah. You know, when we look at Trump and everything he's doing bad, you know, we tend to think, well, this, you know, these fascists are like so powerful. Where'd they get their power? I think we need to look at ourselves. I think it's the weakness of the progressives in this country. Not that they're weak. It's just that we're unorganized. We don't have a unified, genuine progressive movement because, like I said, everything is broken up into identity politics. I think once we stand up as the people, the American people, black, white, everybody, I think those, that power that we're looking at with the conservatives is going to dissipate.
Well, one of the reasons we don't have a united movement to some degree is because some of us disagree that our issues ought to be put secondary and be sacrificed in the name of some unanimity. There are specific issues that affect the Latino community, Native American communities, women, LGBTQ communities, and African American communities.
They shouldn't go neglected.
Those issues have to be put on the agenda. But historically, we have been told by white progressives in particular, we can't do that because if we do that, we'll alienate other white peoples, and therefore we can't do that. And I'm saying there are many, many people who are not going to tolerate. Look, I got to get to another caller. We've been on for quite a long time, and we only have a few minutes. So thanks for your call. Appreciate your perspective. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. My apologies. I took a little bit too much time. We've only got about 10 minutes or so. So let's get other callers into the conversation. 212-209-2877. The state of the race, that is to say, the state of the presidential race, what are your preferences? Who do you see as a candidate that you would support, or how do you see the race shaping up is what we're looking at based on. And we'll do this several times. I'm interested in taking the temperature of our audience. 212-209-2877 gets you into the conversation. Bernie Sanders obviously has a lot of support, as Bill Fletcher was pointing out, very committed supporters out there. Earl Afari Hutchinson said he's down with Elizabeth Warren because not only is she solid on a number of progressive issues and have been for a long time, but she has outlined what everybody was ridiculing. People were ridiculing her for being Professor Warren because she was laying out all these policy positions. But it begins to seem now that there are people who actually like the fact that there are these policy positions, you know, being taken by Elizabeth Warren. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on the line.
Yeah, hi. Hi.
You're on. You're on.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Yeah, I'm okay.
You got to turn your radio down. We have a delay system, so you can't listen to yourself in the same time. So you just cut the radio off and just talk directly.
That's going to take a while. That's going to take
Others can call at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. One of the most important elections, I think, in the history of the country. Yes, sir. You still on?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Hi, I'm listening to your program, and I'd like to bring in some issues that I don't think you're talking about or aware of. First of all, the last election was not won by Donald Trump. It was the hackers put in Donald Trump. And also, the primary for the last election was won by Bernie Sanders and not Hillary Clinton. And so he should be in the White House. Mm. Donald Trump did not win. He lost by a major, major amount that was never brought up.
Well, there are people who do talk about it. There are people who talk about that's what a lot of the discussion about the Russian hacking of the system has been about and a whole bunch of other things.
Yes, it wasn't Russian hacking, okay? It was done by a terrorist group in this country, and I'm very aware of them because I'm also a victim of them.
Okay.
And if you go on the web, on websites, there's a website called WWNYC.com who is accurately, from what I understand, viewing the group that put Trump in the White House. Also, the independent voters in the primary of the last election, they weren't allowed to vote. But even though they weren't allowed to vote, and the majority of them were for Bernie Sanders won over Hillary Clinton by 500,000 votes.
Mm.
And it was stopped by the hackers.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, it's good to have that information. Appreciate your call. Others can call at 212-209-2877. One of the things that we, I think, we'll all agree with is that this vicious attack on these four women of color by the orange man telling them that they should go back to their broken countries that they come from. This was a vicious, outright racist attack, and it happens over and over and over again. And the frightening thing is, as Bill Fletcher points out, there's a bedrock, probably 25% of the American public that would do just what Trump said. He could go down the street and shoot somebody and they wouldn't care. They would still vote for him. And, you know, and maybe another, you know, and he's saying we therefore have got to deal with this, the rest of the electorate, in order to get that, to talk about getting rid of this man. I'm just, the fact that his poll numbers went up. And when I say his poll numbers went up to like 44%, highest of his presidency, there are a lot of people who would be ashamed to say that they're for Trump. So that people are openly saying they're for Trump. And the other, it works the other way around. There are others who in some of these instances, in some of these polls, in the presidential polls, as Earl of Farrah Hutchinson would say, and I heard on Margaret Prescott's show, Ms. Goldberg say, that some of these folks are not going to say they're for Trump, but they are for Trump. And so that makes the polls a little bit off. But the fact that Trump has the highest rating ever is astounding. It is frightening that all of what he's doing, that this would happen. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. You're on the air.
Calling you on the air.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. My name is Laurel.
Yes, go right ahead. We got to do rapid fire here. We got about a minute for each caller, so go right ahead.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Well, I just wanted to call in and say that express my support for Elizabeth Warren. I've read several of her books over time, and when I found out she was running, I was very excited. And I've been going to events through her campaign. They're organizing things and really getting things moving. I heard your first caller say that Bernie Sanders was the only candidate not accepting corporate funds, but also Elizabeth Warren is not accepting any sort of money from any kind of, you know, large corporation or funding. Everything is exclusively funded through grassroots donors. I myself have donated what I can to her campaign, and I definitely I'm excited to, you know, about the issues that she's taking on personally. They mean, you know, a lot to me, whether it be, you know, childcare, paid parental leave, all of that, you know, as a young woman, I feel will be of value in my, you know, in my formative years. You know, they really will shape the trajectory of my life and so many others, you know, whether it be affordable housing, you know, minimum wage. She's working on all these issues that mean so much to the working people of America. And I'm just really excited to be, you know, a part of her campaign and see where it goes and just, you know, continue to support her and as the campaign unfolds.
All right. Thank you much. Appreciate your call. Okay. A strong Elizabeth Warren supporter. We've got about 5 minutes left. So if we got five callers, it's a minute apiece. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Talking to me? Oh,
yeah, you're
thank
on.
You. Okay.
Seeing that I only have a minute, I'll make it very quick. Prior to the 2016 election, it was said that it was one of the most important elections in our century. And we saw what happened from that. Now I'm hearing the same shout again. 2020 is one of the most important elections in our history. And for that reason, we should go to either choice A or choice B, Democrat or Republican. How about choice C, developing another system, developing another party, and forget about the Democrats and Republicans because it's all a game? What do you say?
I say that's not serious because, and I don't mean that in a negative, disparaging way, 2016 was, at that time, one of the most important elections in American history. The outcome of that election and the fact that people didn't think it was important or felt that we should look at other alternatives has us in a situation where we have climate change deniers who are setting policy, people who are undoing the environmental protection for people across this country. Labor rights are under greater assault than ever before. The Supreme Court is going further and further to the right because, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is hanging on by a thread, praying for the next election so that that can be balanced off. And so there's instant and the greatest tax break for the wealthy in American history has just gone down. And a president who disparages immigrants and women. So, hey, that was a mistake not to see that this was going to happen. And it would be a mistake not to see that we have the opportunity tactically to block and blunt that by creating and voting for a candidate that will take the White House, who is not perfect, but that creates the terrain for us to begin to push a more progressive kind of agenda. So that's what I say to that. Got a couple more minutes. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, hi. First of all, in reference to what you just said about a third party, I heard Ralph Nader say on the radio the other day that if the Democrats don't beat Trump in this election, that he thinks it's going to be the end of the Democratic Party.
And that there will be
then the rise of a third party. So, but the point I wanted to make is about Elizabeth Warren. I think she's awesome. I mean, I love Bernie, and I'm always will be loyal to Bernie. But what, besides the great points that you made earlier about Elizabeth Warren's well thought out policies, I also like the way she presents herself. I mean, she has enormous energy. She's incredibly articulate and quick witted. I think she would be great in a debate against Donald Trump. I think she unsettles Donald Trump, as I remember some of the exchanges that they had in the previous election. So, I just think she would be great.
Okay, well, a lot of people are trending in that direction. Look, thanks so much. Really appreciate your call. Well, folks, I don't have time for any more because I got a minute left, so... Our fund drive starts next week, and we certainly want to support our fund drive and make sure that it's highly successful because we are able to have these kinds of debates and discussions among ourselves here on WBAI. Even with the caller earlier, he and I disagreed, but, you know, we're disagreeing as progressives. He's in favor of the progressive movement. He just thinks that identity politics is a negative. I think identity politics is a positive, and we can have that debate. You know, and that's a good thing here on WBAI, but we got to keep it alive, not only alive, it must thrive so that we can continue this as a fortress of resistance, but equally important of transformation, where the vision of a new America and a new world can be articulated and acted upon by people who are serious about that proposition. So stay tuned. Coming up next is the following program, Advocating for Justice with the host, Arthur Swartz. And we'll be back next week here on Vantage Point.
Hey!